Welcome, everybody. And we would like to begin by acknowledging that the land in which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe and Mississauga people. Starting with roll call, I'm Mayor Peter Hopkins.
Councillor Morley Haskell.
Councillor Reg Moore.
Mary Smith.
Councillor Nick Ryland.
Robert
Morrison,
Fire Chief.
Councillor
Mike Hatton.
President
Burton, Deputy Clerk. Any declarations, conflict of interest? Hearing none. So resolution 22416. Be resolved that the Council of Township of McKellar does hereby approve the agenda for this meeting as amended, moving items 6.2 to 6.1 and vice versa, adding item 7.7, planning matters, removing closed session item, renumbering the agenda due to addition of planning matters. I have a mover and a seconder, please. Mr. Hoskins, Councilor Miller, any discussion? Call a question, all in favor? Here, thank you. Okay, so the first new agenda item is that our Fire Chief, Rob Morrison, is going to present what's been going on with two factors. One is a new truck, and two, the Home Safe program. So I'll turn it over to you, Rob, and thank you for all your Halloween stuff over the weekend. It was great.
No problem. That was lots of fun. So in my little brief synopsis that I provide to Council, I've asked to provide the Council on two new programs. We are looking at the institution, or we have started to introduce a program called Home Safe Home McKellar. And I'll speak to that one first. Home Safe Home McKellar coincides with the very nice donation of 50 CO alarms from the Hopkins GMAT Foundation. This allows us to provide CO detectors and some smoke detectors to people who are in need of them throughout the township. The idea is not to just give them to anybody, but those who, you know, are at, let's say, an elevated level of risk and have a decreased level of opportunity to obtain them. So the program started and is already in place. With, as you can see on the one printout that you have, there's a small picture. These are Home Safe Home Kits that we've included in both of our rescue trucks. In them are smoke detectors, CO detectors, and the equipment to install these detectors in people's houses. So when we go to medical calls now, or any fire call, CO call, any call where there is, let's call it an appropriateness of opportunity, to offer to look around a person's house, to offer to assess the person's house for CO and smoke, fire danger, whether or not they have the detectors already. We can offer to install these detectors for them. So the guys are all equipped with these two kits, and so they're ready to go. And then when they do install them, we can then replenish the kits and continue the program. The second part of the program that we are looking at instituting, just beyond the preliminary form, is I've consulted with the Firefighters Association and our firefighters, and there is an interest in creating a program where the firefighters can sign up for, let's say, a two-hour, three-hour, four-hour block of time on a Saturday. And then somebody in the community can then contact me and book an appointment, so that we will send two firefighters out to your house. We can then educate you on CO dangers. We can educate you on the law and the importance of smoke detectors and CO detectors. We can offer to install smoke and CO if you already have them, and if you don't have them, we can provide them for you. And this way, we ensure, or we decrease the opportunity to leave a person not being in the proper position under the law, right? Because as it stands, it is law that you have a smoke detector on every level of your house and a CO detector on every level where somebody would previously. So, these are great fire prevention techniques. These are great public education techniques and public outreach techniques. And so when I brought Home Safe Home and Color to you tonight, what I'm looking for is essentially support from council to be able to remunerate the firefighters who do sign up for these two, three, four-hour chunks, and will go out to people's houses with their normal wage. And so that's really the extent of that presentation tonight.
Questions from council?
Yes. Yeah, Rob, you mentioned about you would assess somebody's home if you had got a call to the home and assess whether they may need these. If anybody is aware, maybe a senior who's living alone has a home and you don't think that they have a proper CO detector, is it okay? Can they make an appointment with you?
Absolutely. That's the whole point. Is that you can reach out to me and I can say that, you know, on the 17th I have an appointment availability.
Right.
And okay. So they can then book that appointment, and two guys will show up in uniform, so that they aren't just opening their doors to anybody, with educational material and time on their hands to be able to sit down with somebody and explain the purpose of the program, the benefits of carbon monoxide and smoke detectors, how to take proper care of them, and before we leave, we ensure that you are properly set up. And the guys will have, I have two forms that I've very nicely been given permission to alter. They paid the heavy legal expense of getting the forms created, and I got to just change the name, so thank you very much for that. But in it is like an acknowledgement of service. We've installed these alarms, and now once we leave the door, you are now in charge of, you are now, you know, we've guaranteed that they are working in a good, satisfactory condition for that.
Very good. So,
thank you.
Okay. Other question? We have a resolution. Okay. All right, so we're Plan B. The second item.
Second item was new Rescue 1. So, in each of the staff reports or the reports to council that I've provided, since the beginning of me being here in June, I've made a point to give you status updates of essentially on health and wellness of our apparatus. And for the most part, we've been doing pretty good, but one constant in all of these reports has been the health of Rescue 1, which was a 2004 diesel ambulance that we bought for a dollar. It was... it's 280-some-odd thousand kilometers on it, and it has not been the healthiest vehicle in the time that I've been here. It has been in for maintenance. It is constantly throwing off different alarms, and we're faced in the position right now where we had to, in order to get ready for winter, hope that it lasts the winter, we had to bring it in for some more maintenance, tune up on the engine, and transmission has not been acting great. But also six brand new tires, because the tires would not make it through the winter. They're just at the wear bars as we are. So when faced with the cost of the forthcoming maintenance that was due, I started the research that was necessary to put together an RFP. In the course of that research, I realized that a lot of these trucks are in very short supply, and the timelines to attain one are looking longer and longer. I happened to come across a 2022 Dodge 1500 that is fully outfitted for emergency response, and I brought the subject forward to our treasurer and our clerk, and I said, How do we work through this? As you can see in the package, I just asked them, I said, hey, can we put our heads together and figure out a way that we can expedite this process, because there's only the one left. I did know that there were other townships that were currently pursuing it. So with their support, we decided to bypass the RFP process and commit to the purchase of the vehicle. The vehicle immediately addresses several of the weaknesses that have been identified through my various ongoing SWAT reviews of the township. SWAT, just so you know, stands for strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. So the purchase of this addressed several concerns. Number one of which is the reliability of Old Rescue 1. Number two would be the safety of Old Rescue 1, being an old ambulance, two-wheel drive. It was never a favorable vehicle to take on an unplowed road in the winter. Limitations of access in Old Rescue 1, as you can see in the proposed ENR bylaw, where we have limitations of service. There are a lot of driveways that are maybe unkept. There are a lot of roads that are not yet plowed. And as we all know, 911 calls don't always wait for the best opportunity and best road conditions to come in. It helps us to meet the health and safety standards that have been put forward by OSHA regarding the transportation of contaminated gear and so forth. When you transport gear from a fire scene, it cannot be in the same enclosed area as people because of the carcinogens that off-gas off of it. So this allows us to separate it from the personnel transport area, whereas in the back of an ambulance we didn't have that luxury. We can now transport four people to and from a scene, which is nice, instead of multiple vehicles with just two people in it. This is the first vehicle that we have in our fleet that has 4x4 capability, which is, to me, fundamental in having a responsible emergency service up here, is that you need the ability to drive down the road no matter the weather. And unplowed roads are like driving on an ice rink in an ambulance. We have winch capability, which helps us, and not only helps us, it helps an ambulance that might be stuck. It helps us to remove vehicles that may be in the way of a response. It helps us in security of accident scenes and so forth when trailers are involved, such as livestock trailers and so forth are involved. It helps us with security of those vehicles. And it also gives us a towing capability that we've never had before. As addressed in the emergency or in the ENR bylaw, and what you'll hear in the upcoming emergency planning sessions that we have, the township has a few weaknesses where we don't, let's say we don't have a boat. Right? This allows us the capability to tow a boat should we be able to attain one via budgetary or fundraising means, or ATVs, or even just an equipment trailer, as in has been identified in our emergency planning sessions, to deliver cots, blankets, stuff like that, should we have a major emergency that has to be cleared in the township. So all of these things were addressed, and I felt that the time was right and the opportunity was right, considering that the timeline to get another one of these would probably be in summertime, so we'd be hoping that Old Rescue 1 would last that long. And the costs were scheduled to increase, according to everybody that I spoke with, in the neighborhood of 12% to 15%. So with the savings not having to do the maintenance on Old Rescue 1, the savings off the cost increase, and so forth, I felt that the time was right to pull the trigger on this process. We had a capital reserve for apparatus at the time of just over $102,000 set aside. So the township was in a position to be able to pay cash for this. And off of the total price of $90,000, we, I believe, are scheduled to get back in the neighborhood of $11,000 HST. So this vehicle is going to cost us $80,000, and it addresses quite a few of the shortcomings of our department. You have to accept my apology. Hopefully, with regards to the synopsis that I provided, I was planning on presenting the invoice and everything like that tonight when I came in, but I didn't include it in the original one. So,
okay. So my understanding is that since we were in a lame duck situation, this is an emergency situation determined by the clerk and the treasurer.
I have no problem terming it an urgent situation, yes.
Okay, thank you. Questions?
Yes. First of all, thank the volunteer firefighters and yourself for the fantastic job you do, and all our employees. And we always want to ensure that all our employees have the best equipment for the jobs that they do and the resources available. But communication is key. When council finds out, you know, days after a purchase is made, it's a little bit concerning. We have the accountability and transparency policy, bylaw number 213-11, and the principles of accountability and transparency shall apply equally to the political process and decision-making and administrative management of the municipality. Some examples of how the council and staff of the municipality provide such accountability and transparency are as follows. Procurement policies, advertising of tenders, RFP documents, financial reports and updates. And stated that there was money in the budget. There was no line item budget amount for this purchase. It was in reserves. And the audited financial statements talks about the controllership policies and procedures to ensure that the council is aware of expenditures that are taking place. And one of the controllership policies and procedures is budget bylaw amendments. And this is exactly where this here would come into play, is that for that to be transferred into the budget, it would have required a bylaw budget amendment, and council would have been fully in the loop of what was going on. So communication is key for a good relationship with council and staff, and following the proper policies and procedures to ensure accountability to the public and our ratepayers, how money is being spent. There's a bit of a concern, you know, through the last, say, 6 months of several incidents where there were no budget bylaw amendments, but they were transferred from reserves. So there's no account, like there's no paper trail of these transactions taking place. And I think this is pretty, I'm not saying the fire department, just the other departments.
I'm yes. unaware of any of that. So.
So anyways, I think that one of the key issues for this term of council is to review our policies so that council and staff are on the same page, so that there's good communication and there's good accountability and transparency with our ratepayers as well.
100% agree. 100% agree.
Thank you.
And well, as you know, I was not responsible for the previous budget, or else very well would have been a line item from there.
Thank you. Yeah.
Any other questions? We have a resolution 22417. Be resolved that the Council of Township of Keller has hereby received the presentation from Fire Chief Bob Morrison on the truck purchase of the Fire Department and the Home Safe Program. Have a mover and a second, please. Councilor Huskey. Any discussion? Call a question. All in favor? Here. Okay, so moving into our key topic, which is the PowerPoint presentation from the Short-Term Rental Committee, just a couple of things. This is my last meeting as mayor, but it's also my last meeting as the co-chair of the Rental Committee. So just a couple of comments before we start. Is there, I really want to thank this committee. It's been a large committee. It's a controversial subject. Everybody has an opinion on it. What we tried to do is find something that's going to work in McKellar, a made-in-McKellar solution that is actually workable. So the committee has met 8 times with a public meeting, and we've really tried to come up with a start. This is our interim report number 3. We've done 2 to council. This is the interim report number 3, and we hope it'll carry forward to the next council. And they will continue to finalize it when this committee ends in 6 months. So they've done a lot of work, really a lot of work. And it's not been easy because we have consensus, but we don't have agreement in everything. So there's always some differences of opinion. But you'll find that in this topic whoever you speak in to tell it. So I can guarantee you that. So this is just the beginning, and we hope that you will follow through with it, and then at the end we'll see if we can answer any questions from council. Okay? I'm going to call on Vanessa, our spokesperson and co-secretary, and Vanessa McBride, and she and a group of people have done a wonderful job putting this all together. So, turn it over to you, Vanessa.
Thank you. So first of all, I'd like to say thank you to council for allowing us to present this evening. You guys were the ones that created this ad hoc committee, and we thought it was important to present to you. For those that you, of you that might not be returning, also with Mayor Hopkins no longer being our co-chair, we thought it was important to present a report to you tonight as far as what we've found so far. As far as the slideshow presentation, we'll go through the welcome and introductions of any committee members that are currently in attendance, introduce the rest of the committee, our terms of reference, our reports and findings, summary of findings, subcommittee short-term recommendations, subcommittee long-term recommendations, and any questions and answers that we're able to answer tonight. Next slide, please. On January 12, 2021, McKellar Council unanimously approved an ad hoc committee on rental properties. Our committee is a group of volunteers consisting of 15 members with 4 additional resource members. Our task was to review current and historical evidence relating to short-term rental properties in McKellar. We were to review other municipalities, the Federation of Ontario Cottagers Association, and engage the public. Although all our meetings were open to the public, we held 2 specifically for them, 1 in June and 1 at the beginning of October. We were to review municipal bylaws, documents, reports, and resolutions pertaining to short-term rentals. We were to define short-term rentals, and finally, we were to make recommendations to council on resolving issues and concerns. Due to unforeseen circumstances in 2021, our committee only hosted our first meeting in June of this year. Since that time, our committee has met as a group 8 times in addition to subcommittee groups gathering and sharing information. Our large committee consists of a wide range of interests involving numerous guests along the way. It is well known that everyone has an opinion on cottage rentals in McKellar. However, finding solutions that are workable, pragmatic, and enforceable have been difficult to approve in many municipalities. We have looked at a variety of issues and possible solutions in trying to find a Made in McKellar approach that is evidence-based. What policies need to change? How can we educate our residents? How can we assure that we can curtail the negatives and embrace the positive side of rentals? Ultimately, we need to find a way to educate our residents, owners, and renters to respect, appreciate, and support the reason they have chosen to live or cottage in McKellar. The beauty of our lakes and the environment, our supportive neighborhoods and community, our peaceful ambiance, while abiding to our various bylaws on noise, parking, fire, boating, while maintaining our septic systems. In short, how can we ensure that everyone, residents, guests, visitors, and owners, respect our beauty, our environment, and each other? Next slide. As previously mentioned, our committee consists of 15 members with 4 additional resource members. Mayor Hopkins and Douglas Hunt are co-chairs for our committee. I'm not sure who's in attendance on Zoom, but I do know that there's some committee members present here. If you could take a moment to introduce yourselves.
Tony Best.
Wanda Muirhead.
Douglas Hunt.
Kim Townsend.
David Murray.
Online here, it's Eric Holmberg. I'm one of the members of the committee.
Also, Doug Moore online.
Leanne Armano online.
Brian Johnson online.
Robson online.
Is Howard in?
Next slide, please. Our approved term of reference is to make recommendations to council on matters pertaining to resolving rental property issues and concerns within 1 year. Next slide, please. The vision, respecting the values of McKellar. How can we ensure that everyone, residents, guests, visitors, and owners, respect our beauty, our environment, and each other by respecting the values of McKellar? We have all chosen to enjoy living, visiting, staying in McKellar for a variety of reasons. To embrace a positive and welcoming sense of community, to protect and preserve the beauty of the environment, to enjoy nature and the ambiance of living in a rural area. Next slide, please. It is expected that all owners, guests, visitors, and renters respect and protect our values by respect the quality of our lakes, respect the beauty of our environment, respect each other, neighbors, guests, and visitors, respect our bylaws, respect all voting and voter regulations, respect the ambiance of our community, respect septic regulations. Next slide, please. Defining short-term rentals. A short-term rental is typically defined as a rental of all or part of the dwelling unit rented out for less than 28 consecutive days in exchange for payment. Next slide, please. So in our public meeting that we had in June, we set up groups of tables where the public wrote down on paper what they felt the pros and cons were to short-term rentals. So these are some of the items that were listed by the public in that meeting. So short-term rental pros: encourages and supports tourism, supports local business, creates local employment opportunities such as property maintenance, cleaning, etc., adds needed income to offset rising costs, helps future cottage buyers to experience cottage life, increases and maintains property values, promotes property improvements and upgrades, contributes to cottage country awareness. Next slide, please. The cons listed were loss and or change of sense of community, lack of respect of the neighbors and the lake, not adherence to current bylaws such as fire and noise, environmental issues such as septic, garbage, lake impact, security and trespassing, liability and insurance issues, decrease in property values. Next slide, please. Defining commercial properties. Commercial property is real estate that is used for business activities. Commercial property usually refers to buildings that house businesses, but also can refer to land used to generate a profit, as well as large residential rental properties. Next slide, please. Our current bylaw excludes short-term rentals as permitted use on waterfront residential properties. There is a need to reconcile the reality of short-term rentals with realistic and enforceable actions moving forward to deal with incidents and complaints while educating everyone on respecting and maintaining our quality of life in McKellar. Next slide, please. The Short-Term Rental Committee has to date reviewed the following: current and historical data, many other municipal rental bylaws and data, FOCA rentals, CBO, BLO, OPP, and MLCA, public concerns, and commercial property owner concerns. Next slide, please. McKellar has an undetermined number of short-term rentals. We estimate 100. From July 18, 2021 to September 10, 2022, the total number of complaints for fire and noise was 55. Total number of complaints against short-term rentals was 17, with 7 repeat addresses. Total number of complaints against owners was 38, with 1 repeat address. Next slide, please. So from the OPP, all the complaints to the OPP do not actually identify whether or not they were against an owner or a rental. But from January 2020 to December 2020, there were 5 noise, 1 open air burning, and 1 other municipal bylaw complaint. From January 2021 to December 2021, there was 30 noise, 1 open air burning, and 1 other municipal bylaw complaint. From January 2022 to September 2022, there were 3 noise complaints, 0 open air burning complaints, and 0 other municipal bylaw complaints. Next slide, please. What does the data tell us? As a committee, we committed to following evidence-based approach based on the evidence it appears, short-term rentals, for short-term rentals. On reviewing numerous documents from our bylaw officer reports, the MLCA report, and other municipalities, it appears as if McKellar currently has approximately 100 mostly family-based oriented cottage rentals, including some Airbnbs, and the number is growing. The actual number of incidents or complaints or actions are few, less than 10%, often repetitive in nature. Some complaints also occur with non-rental properties. Most are small family-oriented rentals that have been renting occasionally for years to generate a few needed dollars without any issue or complaints. Our current bylaws do not allow rentals on waterfront properties. There is a need to reconcile the reality of rental issues with realistic and enforceable actions moving forward to deal with incidents and complaints while educating everyone on respecting and maintaining why we live in McKellar. We found that what McKellar requires is an educational approach for owners and renters. We found we need to amend some of our bylaws to make them clear and concise so that they are easy to read and follow. We need to enforce the bylaws that we do have in place. Next slide, please. So this is a list of the communities we've reviewed in our data collection. So there was McKellar, Whitestone, Seguin, Oromodonte, Port Franks, Grand Bend, Ickerwash, City of Toronto, Port of the Lakes, Harling, Gravenhurst, Bracebridge, Muskoka Lakes, Kenora, Manitoulin Island, Blue Mountain, and Tiny Township. Next slide, please. Many jurisdictions are moving to define short-term rentals to provide clarity in their zoning bylaws. The most common characteristic used in these new definitions is the term of rental of the rental agreement. Some use 30 days, some use 28 days, while others use 3. Any conversation about short-term rentals in McKellar will require McKellar to define short-term rentals. Next slide, please. So as far as short-term recommendations that we were able to come up with, we suggested that we update the municipal website, provide educational information to renters and owners, and a frequently asked question section to make it easier for all visitors to find out about important bylaws such as open burning, open burning with explanation of current fire code, excessive noise, fireworks, parking, septic maintenance, etc. Have a code of conduct, such as respecting the values of our McKellar community. Noise, fire safety, garbage, recycling, and environment. Provide rental owners with a responsible homeowner's rental agreement, including acknowledgement of respect for the community, bylaws, liability, and loss of privileges. Outline the complaint process for bylaw infractions. Create a pamphlet for owner/renter to be sent out with tax bills and available in the local store, library, and marina. Next slide, please. McKellar Responsible Homeowners Rental Agreement. Provides rental owners with a McKellar Responsible Homeowner Rental Agreement for each homeowner to have signed in each rental agreement. Respect, outline for the community. Adhere to all bylaws, noise, fire, fireworks, parking, etc. Encourage proper and safe boating and fishing practices. Provide information of our transfer station practices and hours of operation, a list of environmental septic tank best practices, pet regulations, and wildlife awareness. Next slide, please. Increase enforcement of existing noise, open burning, and firework bylaws. Enforce increasing fines based on number to property owner, not just renters. Enhance noise bylaws. Escalating penalties against the owner of the property for multiple bylaw infractions. Clearly define and reevaluate what is acceptable and what is not acceptable. Next slide, please. Some examples of longer-term solutions that we came up with were a short-term rental licensing system. Numerous municipalities are implementing or have implemented short-term rental licensing. May apply to residents and property owners who wish to rent their property for a period of 28 days or less. It is recommended to new council to consider implementation of a Made in McKellar licensing program based on its own definition of short-term rentals. This approach would require a number of actions to occur, including development and approval of licensing bylaw and licensing program, and the identification and provision of appropriate resources to implement and enforce the program. As these newer approaches may get challenged across municipalities, it's recommended to track these developments to ensure enforceable regulations. Next slide, please. Included in many short-term rental licensing programs are mandatory licensing for renters and residents and property owners who wish to rent their property on a short-term basis, restrict a number of licenses in total, restrict a window to apply, annual licensing fee required, fines if renting without a license, attestation as to the rental property's septic maintenance history and plan for fire safety and liability insurance, occupancy limits and limit to the number of days per year, have a demerit system, loss of license based on violating existing bylaws, excessive noise restrictions, open air burning and parking, ability to reapply on an annual basis. Next slide, please. The right to inspect, manager available, no commercial properties, primary residence only or personally owned, funding of enforcement, license fees to be determined, and other fee opportunities that may arise, minimum number of days per contract or maximum contracts per period. Example, Tiny Township does a minimum of 6-day rental in the summer and only one renter allowed per 6 days in winter. Next slide, please. Summary moving forward. Revision of bylaws, complaint and enforcement process, education for owners and renters, property maintenance and standards, educate landlords on rental contracts and guidelines, level the playing field with commercial properties, be evidence-based and do not make assumptions. Next slide, please. The future of the committee. We're requesting council to extend the committee until fall of 2023 to be able to engage further with both full-time and seasonal residents. Next meeting would be pending continuation of the committee and appointment of new council representation. Next slide. So I'm going to take a brief break before I go to my final slide, I'll pause briefly if there's any questions I might be able to answer.
Well, we have questions from the council first. Again, this is an interim report. Anybody have any general comments? Okay. All right. So, yes.
Can you go back to slide 24, Mayor? The one that says long-term legislative and policy. No, you just went past it, I think. Well, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. Sorry. I'm curious about, you mentioned the annual licensing required and fines if renting without a license and even, you know, potentially losing a license or whatever. So if people were inclined to simply not apply and just ignore the regulation, do you have any sense of how we would deal with that issue? I mean, in both cases, fine for renting without a license or having your license revoked and continuing to rent. I'm just curious. I don't know if there's any research on this that shows a path out of that situation. In other words, if people just blatantly ignore it and keep on renting?
I think the key that we found in our research is to make the licensing system affordable to encourage individuals to want to participate in the program.
Okay.
So if the fees are too high, then people will tend to sway away from going with that system. But you don't want them too low either, because you want to make sure that the amount of revenue that you're getting from the licensing system can help offset it with a potential secondary bylaw officer, whatever the case may be. As far as, again, it comes down to enforcement and complaints and individuals being fined. I'm not aware of what the difference is, really, based on your question, whether or not there would be a difference whether someone had a license and continued to rent after the license was pulled versus someone who doesn't have a license is going to rent anyways. Yeah. I would hope, my personal opinion, not the committee's, my personal opinion would be if you've got someone that is renting and not following a licensing system and not getting a license to do so, the fine should be so much. But someone who's had their license revoked and continues to do so, I personally believe that fine should be even higher. That just because you want people to follow the rules.
Of course.
Right?
Is there any research on the amount of fines or even a fee structure for how fines would be assessed?
We came up with some numbers and we didn't want to include it, only because there's still a lot going on even with the licensing systems as far as what's happening in Ormondante with it being challenged, and Whitestone just revamped their policy. So that's where, before implementing a licensing system, we think it's really important to follow what's already happening to ensure that whatever we have is enforceable and will stand up in court if needed. Because that's where a lot of these townships are running into issues, because they're finding out that it's not going to stand up in court. So following them and then building our process based around that, I think would be beneficial financially to make sure that whatever we develop along the way, it can be enforced and will hold up in court.
Could I ask the question a little differently?
Sure.
In the research that we've done with other municipalities,
yeah.
They presumably have some kind of a schedule of fees, fines, whatever it
yeah.
might be. We have that at least for places that have them. I mean, I'm not necessarily looking for the specifics, but just the broader issue of, is there paperwork that exists that shows what those places are doing?
One of the subcommittees did pull that data, yes.
Okay.
I don't have it with me to quote anything.
Okay.
But yes, one of the subcommittees did. They have as far as what was charged for a licensing fee, what the demerit system looks
sure.
like, how many licenses per year different municipalities were giving out. The application period was different for each. And as well as the funding system. So that's information that certainly the committee can forward on. Absolutely.
I'm sure that's very useful.
Yeah, absolutely. No, I agree.
No more.
I think the licensing issue is a long-term issue, and
yeah.
the data that we've received and talked about is that there's no perfect licensing system. Matter of fact, most of the, you know, we have 50% that are licensed and 50% that are still underground. So, and they've created huge forces and inspections and stuff. So Collingwood, so it's takes a lot of work of how you're going to do that, if you're going to do that. So that's a long-term solution for the new council.
Question. There's very little in your presentation about the official plan and the zoning bylaw. Is the intent in the short term to just ignore what they said?
No, not at all. So... Can you go to bylaw 95-12 for me? Sorry, I didn't memorize the bylaws. So with our current bylaw 95-12, it doesn't identify short-term rentals as a permitted use or a not permitted use. However, short-term rental is not defined in bylaw 95-12 at all. Cottage rentals are under commercial zoning. Individuals renting their residential cottage on a short-term basis is defined differently. And that's where we're suggesting bylaw 95-12 needs to be reviewed. If bylaw 95-12 was enforceable, I wouldn't be making this presentation today. We wouldn't have created the committee, right?
So the zoning bylaw, the comprehensive zoning bylaw 95-12, is a permitted use bylaw. If it's not listed as a permitted use, then it's not permitted.
Okay.
There are no policies in the official plan to allow a bylaw to be passed permitted as it stands right now.
Okay.
So if the council goes ahead, the council today goes ahead and educates and licenses and everyone else, they're knowingly breaking their own official plan and bylaw?
My understanding is that the official plan also needs some updating.
Needs a policy. You can't pass a bylaw without a policy.
Okay. I'm not well-versed on this. I apologize, Mr. Moore. I know that a subcommittee did look into this, and again, my feeling is if it was that simple, the committee wouldn't have been created a year and a half ago. There's a reason why individuals are renting their places on a short-term basis. There's a reason why that when it has gone to court, it hasn't stood up in court. There's a reason why the enforceable bylaws that we currently have are only noise and fire. So there needs to be some changes made, absolutely.
I don't agree with that. You're saying there, but that's all right.
Okay. Okay.
Well, I think the committee thinks it should be reviewed to include a definition for short-term rentals.
Absolutely.
And to make it enforceable. Because right now, we've never fined anybody for a rental on the waterfront with 95-12.
So you again
we've only done fines.
Bylaw.
I'm saying we've not fined anybody for that. What we've done is fine them for noise bylaw or those types of things. So we're not really doing anything with 95-12. And the zoning bylaw, we're not even sure which one we're into. We're the same as the official plan. We've got to get the official plan revised, and we've got
right now, as it stands, it's
the
official plan that's in place 2018 updated, and the zoning bylaw is 95-12. So there's no other zoning bylaw.
Dr. O'Toole, you move. By
count? No, 2019.
Of that. So
the official plan amendment number 9 was
not reviewed. That's right. So they have to be reviewed by the new council and by the staff. That's all.
One document that might be of help to the committee is on the October 11th, 2022 council meeting agenda, 6.1, OHED Salma rezoning, and the professional report from Ted Davidson. It explains quite a few of the topics, issues that the rental committee is discussing, so I would recommend
that's October 11th.
October 11th and 6.1 on the agenda.
Thank you.
Any other questions from the council? Now we can wait for the Q&A period, or we can ask if there's any questions from the audience at this point in time. Normally we wouldn't do that, but we've had a public meeting on it, and we've had a second follow-up meeting on it, so just wait till the question and answer period.
That's I think that would be more appropriate.
So I'm just saying we normally do it with Q&A. We try to keep that strict, but it's up to council to make that.
And we'll keep rolling on it. Yeah,
okay. All right, any questions from people from the audience, Mr. Zulak?
Excuse me, I haven't been involved in this. I'm very hard of hearing.
Do you
want to
come here so everybody can hear you on the microphone?
No? If you listen. Okay, first of all, I was just going to say I'm a farmer. And my zoning says it doesn't say I can't have a slaughterhouse. All right? And then on your page 24, restriction of number of licenses. How are you going to do that then? So just because the people on that committee are in the cottage, it should be a lottery system. The names are dumped in a hat. If you're going to limit the number of licenses, you're creating the class of people up and above everybody else.
Yep.
Where you can have a license, but the license has to be free to everybody and it has to be expensive. You understand what I mean? That's a common sense point. That you, just because the people are on there, if you're restricting the number of licenses, then it should be open to everybody.
Right? Absolutely. No, I agree. And
so. Okay. Now, also, now your fine should be $5,000 a day for anybody to do that. You know, and then there should be my opinion. This is just me thinking on my own because there's no minutes. Do you have any minutes from the meeting?
They were all approved by council at council meetings. Somehow they didn't get transferred.
Well, somehow,
they're now on, because I've now found them all. We've put them all on the website. But so find the request came in. No, they somehow, council had approved them all, but they weren't. They didn't get on the website, but they're now on.
It didn't to me that you got to be because I didn't see it. Okay. Well, so, as I said, that would give me a little bit of leeway.
They're there now.
I didn't see that. Also, it seems to me that the committee is in there to create. I thought the committee was created to look into it. Okay. Now it seems like the committee created because it's going to exist and this is the way it's going to be. You know, it's gone past looking in to become, this is what we're going to do. We're just working towards that. Instead of a yes and no, positive, negative, it just seemed like with the roads. I was on the roads committee and I went through this. You know what I mean? That it just seems that the people are on there have an agenda. And that the majority, I'd like to know personally how many people on the committee rent cottages. I'm just curious. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't honestly know either, to be honest.
Is it the majority? I think that was done with the original one. There are some that do rent. There are some that don't rent. There are some that are against renting. There are some that are absolutely neutral. Some are commercial. So I'm telling you that the whole thing was representative of the community of all the different points of view. There was no singular point of view. What the committee has been trying to do is go through facts and come up with solutions that might work for council to make that decision. It's not our decision. Our decision is to provide you with a report. And that's what they're doing.
Okay.
So it's council that will make any decision on any policy or procedure or change in bylaw or whatever. Not us. We were brought together to research the area, come up with what's going to make sense in McAllen. And that's what we've done.
Well, I know you've got, besides 15 municipalities, including McKellar, and there's 450 municipalities in Ontario.
Yeah.
So 15 is a very small proportion.
We tried to do relatively similar size in this area. It's sort of a component we're trying
to do. Okay, but just, is there an answer? Is a majority of people on the committee in the college of Minnesota?
I have absolutely no idea.
Okay, so who would have that information? Because if you don't have a conflict of interest, which wasn't at the start, then people don't declare conflict. If it's not in the agenda, then every one of those meetings, if there was no conflict on, whatever was designed there is illegal.
It was my understanding when they first formed, there was a question about bias. I think it was brought to the integrity commissioner. The integrity commissioner says, no, anybody who's on a committee, they're not making decisions. They can have their opinion. So they're not, it's not a conflict of interest. It's the same, the same with roads, the same with it. Everybody in the environmental committee is interested in the environment. Is that a conflict of interest? No, it's not. It's an interest because they don't make decisions. They make recommendations. There's a big difference.
Okay, they make recommendations and recommend it to a council. And they, as a committee, a council, work for the taxpayers.
Yeah.
Everyone that's on any committee is responsible to every taxpayer.
Absolutely.
And responsible to, in every committee, they're supposed to have at the start a declaration of conflict of interest. You can't say we have it at the start. In every meeting, there's supposed to be a declaration of conflict according to your own rules. So that's what you go through, and there's this and that, and this and this. That is not acting legally.
We had it cleared, from my understanding, by the integrity commissioner, so your point is irrelevant.
Okay, so could you repeat that again?
I said your point is not valid.
My point is not valid. You don't need a conflict of interest in your agenda.
Not when we're not making decisions, we're making recommendations.
Are you a council? Because you're a council.
Yes.
Then how can the committee of council not live by the procedure bylaw?
They did. And they got it cleared by
the committee. They did the same thing in the roads committee, and they were forced to put that conflict of interest back in. Were they not, Mr. Ryan?
Yeah.
The same thing went on then, didn't it? You couldn't get a recorded vote, you couldn't get in. Because the committee was not acting according to the rules. Exactly the same. There's no difference. Why did they put it in the roads and not back?
If you don't mind me saying, Gordon.
You got to play by the law.
I'm not sure, Gord, that you heard Peter saying that they went to the integrity commissioner for the short-term rental committee. Did you hear him say that?
Yes.
And the integrity commissioner. Sorry?
The integrity commissioner
said that we didn't need to. I'm not sure you heard that part, that's all. I'm not sure you're hearing
I'm not a fan of Mr. Elston. I'm not a fan of him at all. If you wanted an integrity commissioner to actually work for the people of McCulloch, he shouldn't be paid for by McCulloch.
Anyway, that's not relevant either. So, anyway, I want to get back to this report, and anybody from the audience that wants to say anything, anybody from the committee that wants to say anything, they've been working so hard. I'm so proud of them of what they have done. It's not perfect. There is no perfect system that we've found. If that, we would have stolen the good stuff, and that's what we've been trying to do, find stuff that's going to work. But it's been difficult. And all I can tell you, there's a lot of opinions on that committee, and that's been good. That's been healthy. And as a result of that, we've got some consensus that we've got to deal with it and deal with it in a respectful manner. Mostly about having the owners and the renters respect our community. We think that's probably the most important thing we could do. All the rest will be follow up with procedures and processes and enforcements and all that sort of stuff. So,
just one little.
I'm going to ask also, Mr. Kekkonen had another point. So,
it's just if the integrity commissioner give you that in writing, that was all.
Well, my understanding was that I wasn't involved with it.
Can I speak to that for one moment?
Sure.
I believe it was in writing. Marco was our chair at that point. And the members of the committee at that point went through the conflict of interest at that point. And that's when it was decided to resume the committee. We didn't get a first meeting in 2021 because of all the other things that happened in 2021. So we only resumed this past June. But the original committee members did go through the conflict of interest procedure with the integrity officer. And I believe it was in writing. I can't 100% speak to that, but I believe it did.
What's your pick?
There's two different points here. The procedural bylaw, it's one of the items that are required to be listed on the agenda items. A declaration of conflict of interest. Every committee has that. In the previous term of council, the clerk administrator did send out a email to all the committees after it was noted that the roads committee did not have a declaration of conflict of interest on their agendas, indicating that every committee shall have a declaration of conflict of interest in their agenda as one of the agenda items. Because there might be specific items on an agenda at a meeting where there might be a conflict of interest. Although the committee was allowed to exist because they were making recommendations to council and were not making decisions, there may be individual items on the agenda where a member may want to declare a conflict of interest, so it should appear on the agendas.
Can I ask when that email was sent out and to who?
It was sent out to all the committees. I guess it was in... I've sent it to the clerk administrator. She has a copy of it. The current clerk administrator, so she's fully aware of this email that was sent out.
The reason why I'm asking the date that was sent out is there a chance that that was during the time we had no representation from council and the committee never got that documentation?
It's very possible. Yes, it's very possible.
Because we went through from August until, I believe it was technically January of 2022, where we had no representation from council. We also were not a committee anymore because we weren't officially meeting during that time frame. So I'm just saying I've never seen that documentation, and I was one of the co-secretaries as well as Kim. It was never anything we included. It was never anything we were aware of. So I don't believe that email ever got to our specific committee.
It may be possible.
Okay, so the one big thing, when we actually get down to numbers, and I've got some crunching, which I'll circulate to everybody afterwards, but we have about maybe maximum five large rental properties that are causing concerns. I don't know the exact number because it's very, very hard, and we've worked with Chris to try and get numbers, but there's certain people that know which ones are problem children. Okay, we haven't got a solution for that at this point in time. What we're trying to do is do what we have for the majority of the other 95 that don't seem to have a problem. The problem are these, I don't know, call them Airbnbs or whatever. They go 24/7, 365 days a year, and they don't really give a damn about McKellar. And so they're the ones that Chris spends his time in, and that's where the complaints come in. And how do you deal with that group? And that's something we haven't come to grips with at all. So, what we've certainly talked about, we know that that's the crunch area. The other ones that have been renting for years on a short-term basis and that have not really caused many of the problems. It's these large, I would say five maximum. Chris, would you know, would five be close or four? We know of certain ones.
Of ones I know about, yes, five. Yeah. There could be other ones, but nobody's complained about them.
That's right. So they're the ones that we have to, the committee's going to continue to explore possibilities and find out what other people are doing so we can come up with recommendations for them. So this is we've only been going 5 months. We've worked really hard in 8 meetings, public meetings, PowerPoint presentation, reviewed a lot of materials. And we broke them up into subgroups so they could research things so it wouldn't be everybody doing the same thing. And as a result of this, this is where we're at. It's not any actionable items for council at this point in time. It's to receive the report and go forward to continue the committee until September now, I guess, because we want to make sure the cottagers are involved next summer.
Both seasons.
And instead of just till June. So that was the idea that we brought this forward. So that's up to the new council to make that decision. And to take a look at the component, which is educational, and a vision about respect for McKellar. Those are critical factors, and if council doesn't agree with those factors, then everything else is going to be out the window. More than anything else. Yeah, and we've got to do something with the finding and find the owners and do all those types of things, but that's going to be coming down the pipe, so. Okay? Okay.
I have one more slide.
Oh! I'm sure you do.
So finally, on behalf of the members of the Short-Term Rental Committee, we would like to thank Mayor Peter Hawkins for being our chair and representative from council. We would like to thank all council members for seeing the importance of this issue in creating the short-term rental ad hoc committee. We would like to welcome the new council and hope to continue our work with you as we strive to achieving a Made in McKellar approach to short-term rentals, where all members of the community are respected and valued. Finally, thank you to all the committee members for your research and volunteer hours while serving on this committee.
Thanks, Vanessa. Much appreciated. We have Resolution 22-418. Be it resolved that the Council of the Township of McKellar does hereby receive the presentation from the Ad Hoc Committee for Short-Term Rentals. I need a move and a second, please. Councilor Riley, second. Councilor Heston. Any discussion? Call the question. All in favor? Carried. Thank you. Well, before everybody goes, Remembrance Day is Sunday, November the 6th at 2 p.m., not 1, as previously thing has been corrected to 2, and there will be a reception afterwards in the community center, courtesy of the Zulak family. Thank you. So we're in the planning areas. Okay. Who's going to start? Okay, we're into the 7.1, the Ontario Land Tribunal Appeal, dealing with the Solway Fox Farm Road situation. I'm going to turn it over to our deputy clerk.
The Solway rezoning application was refused by council on the April 12, 2022 meeting, and the Solways appealed that refusal to the Ontario Land Tribunal on May 11, 2022. we have received. Council subsequently provided instructions to negotiate a settlement of the rezoning appeal in our office, and Russell Christie was retained to provide legal advice, and Jan Richards was retained to provide planning advice. So they have submitted letters, a final planning report, a draft zoning bylaw amendment, and draft minutes of settlement for the appeal.
Any questions from council tonight? All along documentation. So exactly where is it at now?
So,
just so we know where it's going.
So council can review the legal and planning advice from the professionals, and staff can be directed to either continue with the settlement for the appeal and instruct the legal firm to complete negotiations and execute the minutes of settlement on behalf of the township.
Is this on the table for discussion now, or what?
Well, if it's a resolution that's put on the table, or are we just having, just responding to Carly's introduction to the thing? So we haven't put anything on the table yet, so
okay.
I'm just wondering if anybody had any questions for Carly and before we go to a resolution. Yeah, Warren?
Well, kind of a question or a comment. I'm just wondering if this should be pushed on to when the new council is at a table to deal with, or is there something that this council has to deal with now, or can it just be put over?
It can be put to the new council. This council is familiar with this planning file, so I think the intent was to have it before the old council to make a decision, but if it's your decision to move to the next new term of council, we can do that as well.
Yeah, it's not that much longer. I guess it could be dealt with at the first meeting of the new council, I guess, November 15th,
yeah.
New council, so the,
yeah.
Whatever meeting set
December
right
after. December 13th would be the first regular meeting.
December 13th, then.
So I would like to put the resolution, get the resolution on the table so we can speak to it, and then we can defer it if you want.
Okay, well, there's a question. Yeah, there you go. So we have resolution 22419. Be resolved that the Council of Township Carlisle hereby accept the letter dated October 28, 2022 from Jennifer Bigger, the final planning report from J.L. Richards, the draft zoning bylaw amendment, and the draft minutes of settlement for the Solway zoning bylaw amendment, OLT appeal, and further direct staff to notify Jennifer Bigger of Council's approval of the OLT settlement. Instruct the firm to complete negotiations and execute the minutes of the settlement on behalf of the township. Any movement or second, please. Councilor Brewer. Second. Councilor Ryland. Would you like to speak to Mr. Brewer, please?
Yes. Can you put the page mm-hmm. 3 on the screen?
Yeah.
Environmental report done on this by Riverstone Environmental, report number RS 2021-066, and this page 3 is part of that report. And they've said in their report that there needs to be a 30 meter setback from the shoreline to the building envelope as a buffer zone, as opposed to the 10 meters required in Arizona bylaw. Riverstone has said that there can be nothing in that 30-meter front yard except pathways to a dot, and those pathways have to be constructed out of permeable material. And the rezoning states that they can have an open-air deck and stairs in that space. So the rezoning isn't right in compliance with the environmental report.
Anyone else? I'm sorry. I thought you were finished.
I'm just starting.
I should have known better.
The report also says that there's a requirement the blue areas are wetlands, so the dark blue is a wetlands proper, and the hatched blue or the blue with the blue stripes through it, that's the buffer zone required. So it's 30 meters for wetlands.
French, sorry to interrupt, but can you use the microphone?
Oh, yeah.
Sorry. It's just the closed captioning doesn't work without that.
Okay. And the light green area, those are water courses, and there's a 15-meter buffer zone around those water courses. So the... To begin with, there has to be sediment screen placed around all of those areas during any construction where the materials are going to be moved and that, so there won't be runoff into those areas. The access road to the property has already been constructed, and no sediment screen was put in place. The access road comes right through here, and the access road has a 10-meter right-of-way. Scaling that drawing, there's only about 5 meters between the buffer zone and the lot line. So there's not even any room to put a road in there, but it's already constructed. So it has to be in the buffer zone or across the property line, one or the other. If you look at lot 3, which is the lot down on this side here at the bottom, and the retained lot at the top, the water course, or the wetland, and the water courses join right up. The buffer zones join right up. There's no place to get driveways in. The environmental study has said that you can't have any building or construction in those buffer zones. So I don't know how the people are going to get to their lots. They'll have to fly in, I guess. The only other thing I can think of is that the Riverstone report has said nowhere that I can find that access roadways can be constructed within those buffer zones. So they may have to do another assessment and verify whether they can or not. As it stands right now, the report says no, they can't.
Okay. Other comments? Now going back to Orly's comment about...
I'm not done yet. And if Riverstone does come back in and say that the access, do another study and say that the access roads can go in within those buffer zones, then I'm saying that Riverstone and or the proponent surveyor need to mark those areas out. It shouldn't be up to our chief building official to have to identify where those areas are in the future. They have to stake those areas out, as well as they should put a stake at the top of the 30 meters off buffer zone all along that brown area between lot lines so that he can identify it for future building purposes.
I didn't interrupt you this time, so keep going.
Yeah. Getting back to the... bylaw proper.
Hang on.
It's just
the bylaw proper doesn't address the 30-meter setback from the wetlands. It addresses the 30-meter setback from the
shore.
From the shoreline, and where is it here? Yeah, it addresses the 30-meter setback from the shoreline and the 50-meter setback from the wetland. Doesn't address the 30-meter setback from the water courses. They got that wrong. They included B's wrong completely in the bylaw. because it says 15 meters from any stream or wetland. It's 15 meters from a water course and 30 meters from a wetland. I hope this report wasn't too expensive. I'm not impressed. So anyway, the bylaw is wrong completely there. The bylaw also states in 2A a minimum front yard of 30 meters for the single detached dwelling. The Riverstone report says all buildings and structures have to be 30 meters from the shoreline, not just the main dwelling. And if this stands as it is, the bylaw, it says that in the very end, that, gee, the development is subject to all other applicable general provisions and zone requirements for the waterfront residential two-zone. So the only thing that would have to be set back is the main dwelling. All the other accessory uses could be in the front yard, according to the bylaw. Riverstone says, no, everything has to be 30 meters, except the dock. And I think that was about it. There's probably so, more.
Well, I don't think we're finished with this topic. I think that Councillor Haskell made a good point that this should be deferred with the council. And I think we would entertain that if you have council so desires.
And I think the new council needs to take a serious look at our planning. I'm not impressed with what they've done so far. They've made a mistake in everything they've touched.
Okay, we're going to, but is there any other comments other than what Morley had suggested that we vote on a deferment, Councillor Keckin?
Well, I don't know if we should be voting on a deferment. I believe that the information that Councillor Moore has just presented needs to be relayed to the planner so that that can be addressed when it comes back to the, if it's reviewed by council.
Yeah, that's part of the point. Obviously, there's still work to be done,
yes.
I guess, Caroline.
You've taken all the notes, and you can confer with Mr. Moore and make sure that we get those all covered.
You're running out of notepaper.
With the issues raised on his multiple papers, they will go to the and be reviewed before it comes back to council. That makes sense. So, to me,
the big point is that I am not a planner. Those guys are being paid $200 or $300 an hour to do that right. It's absolutely ridiculous.
So, I've got it down here that we're going to vote on deferring this on the understanding that Carly will take it back to whoever she's going to take it back to and to make sure, Jeremy, and make sure that it is, so some of those things get resolved to go forward to the new council. That makes sense.
Does that need to be part of the resolution?
I think we're deferring it. What do you want to add?
And the new council has to decide how they address. I think Riverstone needs to address them constructing the road without any sediment screen around or any kind of, and maybe building in the buffer zone. That needs to be addressed. We're trying to enact an agreement with them. And they've done something before we've even signed the agreement that's wrong. They had Riverstone's report. I don't know why they did that.
Anyway, what we're trying to do here is you want to add something to this resolution that our deputy clerk takes us back to the...
Have we addressed the concerns raised by
Councillor
Moore?
Concerns addressed by Councillor
Moore. Back to J.L. Richards, is that who we need to address it to, Reg? Yeah. And you mentioned Riverstone, too. Do we need to address them separately?
Riverstone's report is all right. It's just that everything that the planners did doesn't comply with the report.
Okay. So wouldn't this be related to Russell Christie and J.L. Jennifer Fager,
Russell Christie
negotiating on behalf of the township?
Yeah.
They need to review the concerns raised and bring it back. So what has been added is I direct staff to address council's concerns with conflicting reports from Riverstone Environmental Solutions and J.L. Richards. Okay. I need a mover and a seconder. Okay.
I just changed it because this one was to direct.
Oh, yes. Okay. All right. So I better just use the same mover and seconder because we're going to do that. So it's Reg and Nick. Okay. Any other discussion? Call the question on favor. Carried. Thank you. Okay, moving to 7.2. Okay.
Concurrent with the negotiations of Southern Appeal Zoning Appeal, the owner's planner prepared a draft of the consent agreement, amendments to which have been added by J.L. Richards and Associates and by Russell Christie. So that has been provided to council. The letter from Russell Christie, Jennifer Bigger, and the draft consent agreement.
Questions to Carly before we put a resolution on the table?
Is this, this hasn't been sent to the Pearson Dairy Planning Board yet?
I don't believe so, no.
Because they'll be making sure it's registered on title off and copying it.
Okay, so we have direction. There should be a resolution. So, resolution 22420, be resolved that the Council of Township Colors hereby accept the letter dated October 28, 2022 from Jennifer Bigger and the draft consent agreement of the Solid Waste Consent Agreement, and further direct staff to instruct Jennifer Bigger to provide the draft agreement with revisions to the appellant's lawyer planner for their review. I need a mover and a seconder. Anything?
So the appellant's lawyer hasn't seen this yet, then?
No. Okay. So and again, this can be deferred to the new council as well.
I just need a mover and a second to put on the table. Councilor Haskell, second. So is your suggestion to defer this one along with the other one to go forward, put them all together?
I would say so.
Makes sense to me. Is that agreement?
Sure, I think so.
Do we need anything, add anything here? No, I don't think so. Okay. So we are moving to defer this as similar to 7.1. Is there any further questions? Hearing none, call a question. All in favor? Resolution 22421, be it resolved that Council of Township Recovery is hereby going to the Committee of the Whole Act. 7:54 p.m. We have a mover and a second, please. Councilor Allen, second.
Councilor Moore.
Councilor Moore. Thank you. All in favor? Carried. Okay, so dealing with the previous minutes. Yes, please do.
So on the previous township website, more than 2 years worth of council agendas and minutes were on the website for the public to view. With the transition to the new website, only the years, current year and the previous year were added to the website. So staff are looking for direction as to how many years council would prefer to have with minutes and agendas. So we have the current year, obviously, and then we're looking for how many years previous council would like posted on the website. And this may not happen immediately because it will take a lot of work to scan and file the minutes and agendas to post them on the website, and we would be looking into hopefully a better solution and an easier way for officials and the public to be viewing the minutes and agendas.
I would just in common sense would say that if they're there for the term of council, that would make some sense rather than going back 25 years.
No, I don't agree.
Well, a suggestion.
There's always stuff going on here that you need to refer back to, and it makes it easy if it's on the website just to look at it. You're not bothering the office and tying up their time, getting printed and stuff.
How many years?
Most townships go back to 10 years.
I don't know that. Yeah. I have no idea how many, how far they go back.
I just don't.
Well, I don't know that for sure.
Wait, is that a blind date?
No.
Having said that, other than the storage cost to store documents and yeah, you know, with file size and things, I mean, once it's scanned, I don't think there's really any value in deleting it, at least too soon. I don't know what I consider too soon, but, I mean, for tax purposes, most documents are kept for 6 years. Right? I mean, we could use that as a rule of thumb, but I mean, there's no magic to that number either. It's just a number. But
so you'd mentioned a different filing system first, so it was still accessible, though, right?
Yeah, because that amount of storage on the website could have some issues if we were doing 10 plus years of documents. So we could direct staff to look into having an IT person quote what external storage would be, and then there would be a link on the website to click to this additional website that would have multiple years of agendas and minutes.
So I'm going to suggest that we go back for 2 years right now, 22 and 21, and then have the new council look at it and decide what they want.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, I don't have a problem. It makes sense for the time being, at least. But yeah.
I don't know how often I've gone on there to look for stuff and it's just not there.
Mm. Oh, yeah, it's frustrating for sure.
I'm just going to do this one.
So we can have
to defer this for
two previous years and then add that the new council would come back to it with.
Sure.
Carly, can you, sorry, I'm not trying to interfere with you writing.
Yeah.
Can you define the alternate storage then? If it wasn't on the website, it would just be a drive file or something like that that would be linked
somewhere?
Yeah,
something like a Google Documents or like something obviously a little more secure. I'm not too versed in that yet, but we would look into other storage solutions just because it will be, like, agenda packages are very big. Files, so we can't fog up the website with 10 plus years of packages. So we have to look into external storage solutions.
And other townships do that, don't they?
Some do, yes. Okay. Sorry.
Back 2 years and council will review going forward. So we have resolution 22122. Be resolved that the Council of Township of Gunners hereby direct staff to post council items onto the Township of McKellar as follows. Council agendas, current year plus two previous years.
It does.
There we go.
Almost a woodpecker. All right, now I'm going to
step on it.
You need some water for
this. Where's that? That
was
my name.
Stop.
Can you leave the council thing in the
there we go. No. So I'm going back to council agendas. Current year plus 2 years previous. Council agendas will include the entire agenda package, if available. Council minutes, current year plus 2 years previous, and further that the new term of council will review this item at a future meeting. I need a mover and seconder, sir. Councilor Heskin, second. Survival. And for any discussion?
Yeah, just a quick question for Carly. So if we just go back, whatever it's determined by the new council, say 5 years or something, and somebody wants to see something that's back 7 years, what's involved for staff?
That they would email me and I would look into the hard copies and then scan an email. It's not too long a process depending on what people are asking for.
Right, so like half an hour of your time kind of thing?
15 minutes.
15 minutes. Oh. Okay, just food for thought.
Okay. Any further discussion? Call the question, all in favor? Here, thank you. Resolution 22423 be resolved at the Committee of the Whole Rise Act.
8:01
p.m. Mover and seconder, please.
One second. The purpose of Committee of the Whole is to allow for some public input. Are you going to allow the opportunity for the public to provide some input regarding this matter?
Sure. Okay. With council's permission, yeah. Question? Yes, Mr. Moore. State your name again, please.
Yeah, David Moore. It's just a comment. Many of the municipalities, as you mentioned, have agendas and minutes. They don't put the complete agenda package. So if you're concerned about the size of the storage, I think you can probably go back a large number of years just with agendas and minutes. And the actual agenda package, any information that might be referred to, would be in the files at the office if somebody wants to go further. So I don't think you have to worry about putting the entire packages on. Those are large documents.
Thank you.
I like that.
Any other comments?
The only thing I would say, though, the current year at least should have the agenda package.
Can you repeat what Mr. Moore said? We couldn't hear that at all.
Now, we'll repeat that just a minute.
I just suggested that many of the townships put the minutes and the agenda, not the agenda package, on their websites so that it doesn't take up as much storage. And then I think Councilor Moore has another comment for this year.
Yeah, I would suggest that the current year, or maybe the current 12 months, that the agenda package be included on there because it could be ongoing things that people would want to refer to, such as Riverstone's report.
Okay, Sari. We have a resolution on the table, but I need to move it to seconder. Moore, seconder. Councilor Ryan. Call a question, all in favor? Here. Resolution 22424, be resolved that the Council of Township of Cutters hereby accept the minutes of the September 9th, 2021.
Yep. Yep, that's right.
That's
yep.
21? Oh, we didn't bring our past. We found them, didn't we? Okay, regular meeting of Council. I need a mover and a second. Councilor Ketchum, second. Councilor Haskins, any discussion?
Can I get a recorded vote, please?
Haskins?
Yes.
Councilor McKechnie?
Yes.
Councilor Rich Moore?
Abstain.
Councilor Nick Rowland?
Abstain.
Mayor Peter Hawkins?
Yes. Carried. We have an updated report from our fire chief. I'm very pleased with this report. It gives us a really good update, so this is being regular. So we'll resolution 22425 be resolved that the Council of Township of McKellar is hereby received report FD 2022-04. Month-end status update, September 2022, for information. Can I have a mover and a seconder, please? Councilor Moore, second. Councilor Ryland, any discussion? Hearing none, call a question. All in favor? Hearing? Okay, is there any questions related to anything on the agenda that people would like to ask about? Hearing none. Resolution 22426, be it resolved that the Council of Township of McKellar does hereby give bylaw number 2022-55, being a bylaw to confirm the proceeding of the Council first and second meeting, and further read a third time to pass it open Council's first day of November 2022. Have a mover and a seconder, please. Councilor Moore, second. Councilor Bradley, any discussion? Call the question, all in favor? Carried. And the last one. Resolution 22427. Be resolved that the Council of Township of McKellar is hereby adjourned this meeting at
8:07 p.m.
Mover and second. Councilor Ryan and Councilor Haskin. All in favor? Carried. Thank you, everybody.
Yeah. And then, of course,